Hey, everybody, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show. We have a bombshell story from Julie Kelly at declassified.live. You have to check it out. It turns out that the image seen around the world that the FBI leaked to the press after the Mar-a-Lago raid was perhaps not all it was cracked up to be. Maybe it was even doctored. Julie Kelly has the receipts. She tells you exactly what's going on here. She separates fact from fiction. We also talk about the pallets of boxes that the government apparently sent down to South Florida as well. You're going to want to hear that and so much more. We also have Julie Hartman, class of 22 of Harvard, talking about the campus protests, how we need to get rid of the DEI establishment. I couldn't agree more. Julie has a great show with Dennis Prager called Dennis and Julie. Check that out. If you love what you see here and hear here and engage with here at the Charlie Kirk Show and our team, please consider supporting us at members.charliekirk.com, where we give you exclusive access to Charlie and the team and everything we have going on here. That's members.charliekirk.com. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com.
They are counting on your surrender. If you give up, they win. But what if we look back and we realize we were just inches away from victory, and that's when we decided to give up?
Join us and thousands of American patriots for the summer convention that all are invited to.
You're going to hear how we're going to win in 2024.
With the biggest speakers in the movement, featuring President Donald J. Trump.
We're going to fight and we're going to win.
Charlie Kirk, Vivek Ramaswamy, Governor Kristi Noem, Dr. Ben Carson, Steve Bannon, Candace Owens, Lara Trump, Senator Rick Scott, Congressman Matt Gaetz, Benny Johnson, Jack Posobiec, and more. June 14th through 16th.
2024 is our final battle.
In Detroit, Michigan.
The great silent majority is rising like never before.
Join us for the People's Convention.
This is a new ball game, everybody. You send a message. We play to win.
Register now at tpaction.com/peoples.
Right now, I'm very excited. I have Julie Kelly, declassified.live. Declassified with Julie Kelly is the Substack. Declassified.live. Everybody needs to check it out. She has a bombshell story, and I say that I know that term gets overused. This is a bombshell, folks. Charlie tweeted it out earlier this morning, linked to the Substack article from Julie. So without further ado, Julie Kelly, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Hey, Andrew, thanks so much for having me on.
Yes, absolutely. I feel like, you've been on with Charlie many times, but the last two times I've just timed it out where you have these bombshells where I'm hosting. So,
Great.
You get me, and I'm thrilled about it.
Awesome.
Julie, you do amazing work on this stuff. You really do. It's like you, Mike Davis, John Solomon. I mean, there's not too many people that are covering this in depth. The mainstream news media is completely ignoring it, but this is big. And I want everybody to take a look at image number 71, that image. And if you are at all following the news for the last couple of years, Julie, this image is famous. It went viral. And I'm going to let you do it because you are the expert here. But suffice to say, Julie, am I wrong when I say that image was a complete fabrication? It is staged. Tell us the details.
It is a complete fabrication. Now, when that photo was released, in a court, in a lawsuit that Donald Trump had filed about the Mar-a-Lago raid. That photo was included by the Department of Justice as an exhibit to show part of the records, classified documents that were taken out of Mar-a-Lago. Now, the purpose of that photo, Andrew, and what I believed at the time, and I think a lot of people believed, and the DOJ at the time tried to make the court and the public believe, is that that is the condition in which those records were found, that they had those scary looking colored official cover sheets to denote the classification level of the records that they took. Well, what we now know in all of these motions now and briefs that are being filed in the classified documents case, what happened, Andrew, is at the FBI brought those cover sheets to the raid. They attached, and if you look closely, you can see how they are paperclipped in uniform fashion. They took those cover sheets, they took them to the raid, they attached them to files, they spread them on the floor. They took a photo, and then they tried to deceive the American people and the court, Judge Cannon, into believing that is how the records were found. They were not found that way. The FBI brought those cover sheets, not just for that photo, but also as placeholders to put to replace in a box full of other items or other papers, use it as a placeholder to indicate where a classified record had been found. They had to take the classified record out, put it in a secure, you know, location for classified discovery evidence. But that is also how the cover sheets were used for this stunt. Doctored evidence in a lawsuit in an official government filing. Now we know they staged the entire thing.
Okay, so we are showing the image of that famous image with all the documents after the raid. The FBI was like, and they spread them out on the floor, they splayed them out, and they put all these top secret cover sheets on them. Oh, look at this, and it's got all the confidential markings. And the whole world went bananas, as you'll remember, Julie. I mean, this was the image seen around the world. Look at this, Donald Trump is gonna get America bombed by, you know, or whatever, it's a threat to national security. I'm just gonna play one of these, Julie. I had the team pull some of the contemporary reactions to it. Let's go ahead and play cut 55 just for some entertainment.
I was actually shocked by it because what it tells us is that as far back as January, the government knew that not just classified documents, but the most highly classified documents in the government categorized were found in that 15 boxes of documents that the Trump team turned over. So these are the kind of documents, Kristen, that you have to go into a special room to look at, that the disclosure of which could compromise sources and methods, could get people killed.
Could get people killed, Julie. So turns out it gets worse, though, correct? The cover sheet that they used to make it look, oh, look at Trump literally took this document with that was clearly marked as, you know, highly classified, and he put it in a box, and he was just storing it in a bathroom at Mar-a-Lago. We raided the president's home for national security because people could get killed. That's not what happened. They put a piece of paper that they brought with them, and then they attached it to the wrong documents. Those, they don't even correspond or line up. Am I making this part up?
Well, let's get to that part, but let's go back to how the FBI doctored that photo. What agents are responsible for putting those classified cover sheets on files? Were they intelligence experts, Andrew? Did they know right away that document was high top secret, or this one was simply confidential or classified? Were they experts that they could make such an on-site quick determination? Did their assessment correspond with the intelligence community review that we were told had to be conducted as well? Did the agents get that right? Were the red sheets, you know, the highest level, you know, flashing red lights, this is the worst, you know, nuclear secrets, is that actually then what the intelligence community determined after they did their assessment? How can you have FBI field agents at Mar-a-Lago just willy-nilly determining whatever the markings might have been on these papers, to the extent that there were any markings? How did they not know that they had not been declassified by Donald Trump? They didn't care. because they got what they wanted, which is a few weeks after the raid, as even some Biden regime friendly outlets were kind of criticizing Merrick Garland for this, thinking, is this really the best course? That photo drops and everyone goes, see, this FBI raid was worth it because look at these top secret documents that threaten national security and could have resulted in the murder of, you know, human intelligence sources around the world. So now we know that that was a stunt. Now, to your point, even more alarming now, the disclosure by Jack Smith in his filing late Friday is that those cover sheets, when they were used as placeholders, as I explained in these boxes, they can't even say for certain that every placeholder classified cover sheet used as a placeholder among all these other papers corresponds with the classified document that they took out of the box. So where are those records then? How can you say, well, this nuclear secret document was found in box number 16, and here's the location where it is, here's the placeholder. What Jack Smith is basically saying, well, in some instances, we can't confirm that that piece of paper some random agent put in there actually matches the alleged classified document taken out of there. Furthermore, Andrew, the DOJ just admitted that the contents of the boxes when they were first seized in August of 2022 are not in the same condition now. That a lot of the items or papers have been misplaced or moved around. And in fact, the defense attorney said, even the classified documents were told that were in that box. We were told the index, the FBI index says it was here. But then we find it hundreds of pages later. So Jack Smith just admitted to, yes, the boxes currently are not in the same condition they were after the raid in August of 2022. This is very problematic on many levels.
Debt, it keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest rate credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have new aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. With Pivotal Debt Solutions, you can cut or even eliminate interest, find programs to write off your balances so you owe less, stop these threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line is they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first to talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can get you out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That is zapmydebt.com, zapmydebt.com.
Julie, so let me get this straight. So not only did they doctor an image, we only found this out because Judge Eileen Cannon is not apparently owned by the deep state and by the government gangsters, as Kash Patel likes to say. I'm going to read, I guess this would be a truth from Kash Patel. He says, translation, government gangsters possess classified docs, ship them to Mar-a-Lago, to 45, then charged him. So the GSA possessed the boxes of 45's papers before they shipped them to Mar-a-Lago. Explain this pallets of boxes story. What's true? And what are the implications?
So this is a big question, Andrew, related to the chain of custody of all of these various boxes that were at Mar-a-Lago. So you had boxes that were packed up at the end of the administration, some of them packed up by the White House records management staff, perhaps some from the National Archives. Those boxes transported to Mar-a-Lago after the end of the presidency. Then you had upwards of 100 boxes of presidential, we're told presidential or government records, they had to be, that the GSA, the General Services Administration, who handles presidential transitions, kept at a storage facility outside of Washington in suburban Virginia. They kept those boxes for 6 or 7 months before they notified Trump's team, hey, we've got to get rid of these boxes. The transition period is over. We can't, as the government, continue to fund this or house these records. Where do you want them? They had 6 pallets of boxes. 2 pallets went to Mar-a-Lago. four went to another storage unit in, I believe, West Palm Beach. So you had almost, I guess it was 2,000 pounds of records. This is based on the pallet weight going to Mar-a-Lago. Those boxes then put somewhere inside of Mar-a-Lago, presumably the storage room where, you know, allegedly these classified documents were found. So the question, Andrew, and this is something that the defense attorneys have been asking, is accountability for which boxes were personal items, which boxes were transported to Mar-a-Lago after the end of the presidency in January 2021, a truck showing up on the plane, et cetera, versus what boxes the government had custody of for more than 7 months before they were then transported and housed at Mar-a-Lago. If those boxes, and it does appear that in December of 2022, after another search by Trump's team for papers with classified markings, that a few of those documents were found in the boxes that had been shipped from the GSA to Mar-a-Lago. So how are they going to then meet the willful element of the Espionage Act that Donald Trump willfully took those documents without authorization and kept them, hid them from the government, hid them from a subpoena, and then tried to hide them again from the FBI? If he never saw those records, if those boxes had never been opened because they were delivered in September of 2021, the raid was August of 2022, how can he possibly be responsible guilty of the Espionage Act when he didn't even pack them or know that they were there?
Well, so in layman's terms, Julie, and I know you have to be very specific, but what I'm hearing you say is the government had all these boxes. Probably some of them had confidential documents inside, shipped them to Trump, and then basically said, Trump, you're guilty of violating the Espionage Acts for boxes that we shipped to you.
That is a possibility. That has not been proven because we don't know which boxes the FBI took out of Mar-a-Lago in that raid, whether they were original boxes or the GSA boxes.
Well, but
I assume,
Julie,
we will find that out at trial or at some point. But again, the defense attorneys are asking for a chain of custody and identification of every box that the FBI has, both the NARA boxes and the boxes that they took during the raid.
Well, but Julie, they can't even... Now we're finding out that Jack Smith and his goons can't even tell you if the boxes are in the same order as when they raided the... I mean, they don't have any idea on chain of custody. So we're expecting them to be able to piece back together 100 boxes that were shipped down in pallets to West Palm and Mar-a-Lago. Like, the whole thing... I mean, this whole thing feels like entrapment. You know,
exactly.
I think the onus needs to be on the government to say that they weren't entrapping a former president.
I've called it entrapment. If people want a whole timeline, too, of the Biden White House collusion with this involvement, you could look at my piece at Real Clear Investigations that gives a detailed timeline as to how we got here.
All right. Thank you, Julie Kelly. You're amazing. Thank you. Keep it up. Keep up the great work.
Hey there. Investing feels overwhelming right now, doesn't it? So complicated, so many decisions. But leaving your money in the bank, not so great. It's losing value every single day. So if it's stressing you out and driving you nuts, invest with Noble Gold Investments. Their precious metals are simple and real. There isn't a company on the stock market that was around 2,000 years ago, but gold was. It's always been there through wars, disasters, and turmoil. Reliable, dependable, and authentic. That's why you can't go wrong with precious metals. They've always had your back. Noble Gold Investments' American-based experts will show you how to set and forget your IRA or 401k. You'll get a dedicated professional assigned to you. No hassle, no call centers. Colin Plume runs Noble Gold Investments. We've had him on the show before. He's awesome. I love hanging out with him. He's terrific. I can vouch for his integrity and for his knowledge about gold and silver. In fact, I have my silver right next to me right here. I buy all of my gold from Noble Gold Investments. I have vetted them top to bottom. In fact, I know a billionaire that just made a very big purchase of gold from Noble Gold Investments. So visit NobleGoldInvestments.com to claim your gold coin. This month, Noble Gold Investments is giving a free quarter ounce gold standard coin at each qualifying IRA investment. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com, NobleGoldInvestments.com.
I'm very excited about this new guest. This next guest is a new guest to the show. Her name is Julie Hartman. And she is host of the Dennis and Julie show, Dennis Prager. And she is a Harvard grad. And so what a perfect guest to have to talk as our schools, our universities, and our campuses are getting embroiled in this pro-Hamas movement, these encampments. So without further ado, Julie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, honored to have you. I've been hearing so much about you from so many mutual friends. I think people are inspired by your voice, by what you did with your senior speech at Harvard. When you graduated, you were invited to give a senior speech. I want to play that. I had my team clip it really quick, but just introduce yourself to our audience and what you're doing with Dennis Prager.
Sure. So as you said, my name is Julie Hartman. I'm 24 years old, and I graduated from Harvard about 2 years ago, coming up on 2 years, which is crazy. Time flies. But when I was a sophomore in college, I had kind of a big political awakening, because that was the year that I was sent home due to the COVID lockdowns. And that was also the summer of 2020 when Black Lives Matter riots convulsed all throughout our cities. And I looked around, Andrew, and I said, if this is the left, this is not who I am. So I went online and I looked up, what do conservatives think about police? And there I found PragerU. That brought me to Dennis Prager. And because it was during quarantine, I had nothing but time to learn and read the great books of many conservatives. And I realized my conservative instincts. And so, to make a long story short, I contacted Dennis Prager. I just emailed him to thank him for his influence on my thinking. He then very graciously invited me in to watch his radio show. When I was there, he invited me on the radio. And then one thing led to another. And now we have a show together called Dennis and Julie, where we talk about all of life, but especially the crisis among my generation specifically, which is overwhelmingly, unfortunately, anti-American.
Yeah. And I love that. I love that kind of journey that you went on of discovery. I wish more young people would similarly take it upon themselves to research what both sides actually believe and where their values are emanating from, the sources of a lot of these ideological rots and cancers in our culture. And I mean, hat tip to you for taking the initiative. It shows, I mean, I understand why Dennis, you know, gravitated towards doing a show with you. And by the way, to Dennis's credit, he's always taken such an interest in young people. Charlie credits him as one of his first and foremost, most important teachers in his life. And Dennis pours himself out into the next generation with PragerU and so many other things. So I'm going to play some clips from your senior speech. I know you have a show with Dennis, but this senior speech was really something. Let's go ahead and play Cut 75.
Last spring break, I went on a trip with 100 other Harvard undergraduates to Israel. It was one of the most extraordinary experiences of my life, and I will always be grateful to Harvard for that. I recall the trip with awe and joy, but a certain moment rattled me. Our group attended a Shabbat dinner at a Tel Aviv synagogue. The rabbi proclaimed, "Welcome to Israel. You are all here from America, the best country in the world." He paused, but not a single person clapped. The Israelis stared in disbelief. Americans are the freest, most privileged people on earth. Yet many of us are ashamed to show any, even the tiniest trace of national pride. Why? Because we Americans of recent generations have been swaddled in prosperity and security, and in consequence, have become ungrateful for the blessings we enjoy.
Cutting stuff right there, Julie. What a moment, by the way. And really what you're describing there, you're seeing manifest on college campuses right now with so many of these protesters. Connect the dots for us. What was your experience like at Harvard? And can you draw a direct line between your experience and what we're seeing now at Columbia and so many other schools?
Well, I want to say that overall, despite being sent home for a year and a half of my college experience due to the irrational and terrible COVID lockdowns. I do want to say that in many ways, I had a great experience at Harvard. I made a lot of great friends. I had a great dorm. I had a lot of opportunities, including, ironically, as I said at the beginning of the speech, the opportunity to go to Israel. So I'm saying this because I believe that these institutions have enormous opportunity to be places of growth and places where people can really go and thrive. And in some ways, I did do that at Harvard. That being said, I also saw some of the, I think, kind of seeds of the craziness that has metastasized now. And mainly, I saw what I identified in that video, that few people on campus, if any, showed any semblance of national pride. Putting an American flag up in your dorm or saying you're proud to be American was kind of deemed a conservative thing. You know, you don't do that. It's not cool to do that. I also remember people would protest about various things. There was a speech one time on campus and many individuals went in and disrupted it, calling for Harvard to divest from fossil fuels. And the administration didn't do anything about it. They just let the protesters go in and wreak havoc on the ceremony. I remember people got really upset because there was a class at one of the graduate schools on policing. And so right now, when we see the explosion of entitlement and extremism on these campuses, my response to these universities is, well, you've given the mouse a cookie so many times. You've allowed people to protest. You've allowed people to shout you down. What did you expect? And I definitely saw that when I was in college.
Yeah. And, you know, you're seeing this now with what's going on with Charlie visiting University of Washington. We had Jason Rance on earlier who lives in Seattle. And his basic observation is that the administration is completely pandering to this encampment that has grown day by day. Now it's over 150 tents large. It started with 10. And that would have been a great opportunity for them to, you know, disperse the encampment and say, you can't, this is illegal occupation of campus grounds, which is a public university. You can't do this. You can protest here, apply for a permit. We could give you some other space to speak freely. But this is the real thing. And I'm going to pull a clip from Columbia in just a second, which I think perfectly encapsulates the entitlement we see from some of these protesters. But Julie, it's also being funded, right, by outside groups. We've seen reports that money is flowing in. Outside agitators are radicalizing these students. I'm not sure you ever saw anything like that, but it also the implications are profound because, again, if a conservative student or a conservative group like Turning Point USA does anything, you know, we're having to negotiate with the police in advance. It's highly scrutinized. There's a lot of attention. Meanwhile, these outside groups seem to be acting with impunity. Did you see anything like that in your time at Harvard? But if you didn't, what do you make of that? Those outside groups being involved that are Democrat donors, by the way?
Well, I think a lot of outside agents, both foreign and domestic, stand to benefit from the kind of division that we are seeing now. Mm-hmm. So it is not shocking to me at all. I mean, this is not an example of direct funding per se, but look at all of the radicalism that is spread on TikTok. We know the parent company of TikTok is ByteDance, which is a CCP-backed enterprise. So there are a lot of kind of currents going on here, which are pushing, to your point, this kind of rancid explosion on these college campuses that we're seeing. So a lot of people definitely do stand to benefit from this, and it's something that we should be aware of. But, you know, as terrible as all of this is, I have to say, Andrew, I think that something good may come out of this. And maybe that's just my optimistic side. But these campuses have become non-functional. Columbia just canceled its main graduation. Students are on Zoom. Students are going home. These universities have to recalibrate or they will continue to be non-functional. So that's the silver lining here.
Yeah, I do think there's an opportunity for improvement. I mean, you saw MIT got rid of their DEI statement, and they were actually the first elite university to reinstate standardized test scores, and then other Ivies are following suit. So that there are some positive movements. I'm nervous, though, Julie, that this whole thing is going to be taken to clamp down on what should be free speech, what should be protected protests and protected speech. So one of the things I'm really worried about is that, you know, in order to shore up different constituencies within the Democrat coalition, Joe Biden's going to start clamping down on some constitutionally protected free speech.
You might have heard Mike Lindell and MyPillow no longer have the support of their box stores or shopping channels the way they used to. They've been part of this cancel culture, so they want to pass the savings directly onto you by having a $25 extravaganza. When Mike started MyPillow, it was just a one-product company. With the help of his dedicated employees, they now have hundreds of products, and some of you may not even know about it. To get the word out, I want to invite my listeners to check out their $25 extravaganza. Two-pack multi-use MyPillows, just $25. MyPillow sandals, $25. Their six-pack towel set, $25. Brand new four-pack dish towels, you guessed it, just $25. For the first time ever, their premium MyPillows with the all-new Giza fabric, just $25. Orders over $75 will receive free shipping too. This amazing offer won't last long. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Kirk or call 800-875-0425 today. That is promo code Kirk at MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk.
Well, first of all, we're saying that they're obligated to provide food to students who pay for a meal plan here.
But you mentioned that there was a request that food and water be brought in, unless I misunderstood.
To allow it to be brought in. I mean, well, I guess it's ultimately a question of what kind of community and obligation Columbia feels it has to its students. Do you want students to die of dehydration and starvation or get severely ill, even if they disagree with you? If the answer is no, then you should allow basic, I mean, it's crazy to say because we're on an Ivy League campus, but this is like basic humanitarian aid we're asking for. Like, could people please have a glass of water?
But they did put themselves in that very deliberately, in that situation and in that position. So it seems like you're sort of saying, we want to be revolutionaries, we want to take up this building. Now would you please bring us food and water?
Nobody's asking them to bring anything. We're asking them to not violently stop us from bringing in basic humanitarian aid.
They're stopping the delivery of food?
We are looking for a commitment from them that they will not stop it violently.
But they haven't stopped it yet.
I don't know to what extent it has been attempted, but we're looking for a commitment.
All right, Julie. They're looking for the revolutionary meal plan. I just had to play that clip because it feels like the perfect embodiment of this entitlement you're describing.
Oh, it's absolutely true. It's, I think that what's happening now, as I said, has been allowed to spread for so long on these university campuses. Every time university presidents or donors or professors allowed a lie to be spread about America, every time they judged people based on race or oppressor status, every time they allowed crazy theories about gender or policing to spread, every time they allowed a protest on climate change to happen, they laid a brick in the now massive edifice of entitlement and extremism that we just saw.
Yeah, they fed the beast, and now the students are demanding to be fed.
Yep.
Julie, I want to wrestle with this idea of censorship, of the using anti-Semitism as a way to infringe upon constitutionally protected speech. Right now, everybody hates anti-Semitism. At least most people do. I would say the vast majority of the country is appalled by it. That being said, listen to this clip today. This is our education secretary talking about how he needs more money to police this stuff. Cut 72.
Sir. Well, let me put it this way. Will you commit to launching compliance reviews of campuses within the next 30 days?
We have a process where we're providing information to campuses. We've done more in the last 6-7 months than the previous administration has done.
It's not working.
If you fund
from
us,
what we've
sir,
seen in the last 2 weeks. You know, I appreciate the fact that University of Michigan did not negotiate, ended up going on with their commencement, speaking parochially here. Mm-hmm. But Jewish students are still in fear of their lives and their academic success on that campus and many other campuses. And the opportunity that you have to launch these reviews, you have solely. It doesn't take Congress or anyone else to ask you. I certainly hope you'll make this a priority because it's for the future and present of students and universities and colleges under your priority supervision.
So, Julie, you can see there's a tremendous amount of pressure to police anti-Semitism on campus. What is the right balance there between speech and bringing these universities to heel?
Listen, I am a free speech absolutist. I think that all of the anti-Semitic rhetoric that we are seeing right now, where, you know, Jews are being called pigs and dogs on these college campuses. I think that is despicable, and I completely and totally disavow that. That being said, I think that people should be allowed to say what they want to say, including terrible things. We in this country should not police speech. We should police conduct. When that crosses over into conduct and violence, that is what we should police. So I think with this Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, if Republicans are trying to highlight the hypocrisy of Democrats in that, you know, they are turning a blind eye to anti-Semitism when they are always talking about, for instance, you know, anti-Black racism, they're doing a good job. If the Republican Party is trying to highlight that anti-discrimination law is not equally applied to Jews, yes, that is true. But we need to be getting away from anti-discrimination policing speech law. We need to be getting away from protections based on group identity and government getting involved. Again, my position is that we allow people to say what they want, including terrible things, but we vigorously police conduct and action.
Yeah, exactly. And Joe Biden also weighed in this morning. He's obviously feeling the pressure, to police this because he's caught between his donor class and the establishment in Congress versus the activist class. And so he's really up against it. I'm going to pull this clip here that I think shows this perfectly. Cut 64.
I understand people have strong beliefs and deep convictions about the world. In America, we respect and protect the fundamental right to free speech, to debate and disagree, to protest peacefully, and make our voices heard. I understand that's America, but there is no place on any campus in America, any place in America, for anti-Semitism or hate speech or threats of violence of any kind.
Seems like he's getting away from this free speech absolutism that that you and I both share. Julie, take it away. What should be done? What is the right path forward, both for these universities and for the country?
Fire every single DEI or DEI-related employee in these schools. That is step number one. Step number two is to go back to making these universities American. It is not intellectually imperialist to teach American values. It is not intellectually imperialist to require Western civilization courses, as was once required on these universities.
Amen.
This is America. We are American universities. We need to get back to our roots. That's why I call myself a conservative. I want to conserve the principles of the American founding. That is the course of action that these universities should take. And by the way, all of the donors should pull their money immediately until they change course.
Amen. Well said, Julie. Julie Hartman, check out the Dennis and Julie show by all means. Great work, Julie. Thank you for coming on. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Talk to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.